is The Guardian.
Regid Ahmed here on Gadigal Land with the full story.
I will never walk away from the mandate I was given to change this country. I will never walk away from the people that I'm charged with fighting for. And I will never walk away from the country that I love.
Could the Epstein files bring down a British Prime Minister?
Did the official security vetting he received mention Mandelson's ongoing relationship with the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein?
So clear. Prime Minister?
Yes, it did.
As victims of the convicted paedophile Jeffrey Epstein continue to speak out, the latest tranche of files have painted a larger picture than anyone expected. They reveal a much closer relationship than originally thought with Epstein and British Labour power broker and former ambassador to the US, Peter Mandelson. And that's where Keir Starmer comes in.
I want to say this. I am sorry. Sorry for what was done to you. Sorry that so many people with power failed you. Sorry for having believed Mandelson's lies and appointed him.
Today, Guardian Australia's UK-US site editor Jonathan Urashami on how the long trail of the Epstein files have rocked British politics. It's Thursday, the 12th of February. Hi, Jonathan. It's good to see you.
Thanks, Regid. It's so nice to be here with you.
So before we get on to the latest, we're just going to set the scene. Keir Starmer sweeps Labor to power a year and a half ago. He ends 14 years of Conservative rule. And now, even before this latest scandal, he's become hated and unpopular. Why?
And, you know, it's so important to point out quite how unpopular he is. He is the most unpopular Prime Minister in recorded history in Britain. He is more unpopular than Boris Johnson. He is more unpopular than Liz Truss. His government has seen the biggest fall in support of any government in history, on recorded history. It's extraordinary considering a year and a half ago he won this incredible mandate, 400 seats in Parliament, the biggest in decades, and now we're here. And the question is why? Well, why? There's no really one answer. There's many, many answers.
And I'll say he's a nice guy. He's a really nice guy, but...
Yeah, I think the part of the problem is that he is a lovely guy, but he's not a politician. And that is what all of his supporters say. They say he is doing the right thing, that he's this incredible human rights lawyer with a brilliant career behind him. He entered Parliament 10 years ago, 11 years ago. And he's not a natural politician. So he's a technocrat. He's someone who thinks that reforming Britain after 14 years of Tory chaos, you know, bringing back investment in public services, fixing the NHS, all of these really important things to voters, he thinks that will be enough. But these things take a lot of time, don't they? They're not going to happen overnight.
No, and it's a very impatient British public that wants change.
They are in the middle. It is a hugely, hugely, viscerally angry British public as well. They've just come out of 14 years of Tory rule that saw public services really destroyed in a lot of cases. David Cameron's government, the British Prime Minister from 2010, he put in this program of austerity. You know, there was a decline in public investment. And then after that, you had the chaos of the Brexit years. Theresa May, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, Rishi Sunak. People were fed up with politics. And Keir Starmer came into power saying, we will tread more lightly on your lives. We'll make sure that politics isn't consuming everything in your lives. And I think that was a hugely important thing to voters. But the past year and a half, politics has been ever present. Keir Starmer's government is rarely off the front pages, and not for good reasons. And there was also this very unpopular decision to cut the winter fuel allowance. So this was money that for pensioners so that they could heat their homes in winter. And he cut that. And there was this huge outcry and a rebellion amongst his own Labour MPs, which then was followed by a U-turn. And that was the, you know, one of many, many U-turns that Keir Starmer has carried out in his time as Prime Minister. And when you speak to voters, when our colleagues in the UK are out on the street speaking to voters, what they know of Starmer is that he's someone who doesn't seem to understand the direction he's heading in. He doesn't have a clear narrative for what his government represents. And those U-turns are emblematic of that issue.
So against this backdrop of policy U-turns, unpopularity, angry British public, the latest Epstein files drop. And they reveal fresh details about a man called Peter Mandelson. He's a huge Labour figure, but before we talk about what the files said about him, just give us an idea of how big a figure this man is.
Peter Mandelson is a titanic figure in the British Labour Party. He has been, you know, at the forefront of that party for as long as I've been alive, for decades. He was involved in Labour Party politics in the 80s, and then he became very close to Tony Blair and Gordon Brown, and he's really considered one of the architects of their New Labour project. This was the project to make the Labour Party electable again after an even longer period of Tory rule. And it meant pushing Labour to the centre, it meant adopting a lot of more right-wing politics, and it was a very different kind of politics than what the UK was used to, and it resulted in incredible electoral success. And people believe that he was a huge factor in that. He is regarded as an incredible politician, an innate politician. People call him as Svengali. That's possibly playing into his hands a bit there.
But the Prince of Darkness. He was a big spin doctor.
He's someone who's thought to have a huge amount of power and influence in Westminster. But along with that, he's been beset by scandals for decades. He has been forced to resign twice in previous roles in government. And yet he was brought back by Keir Starmer's government to be the ambassador to Washington.
And then, presumably, he was put in that position to help bridge a relationship with Donald Trump, but then he's removed from that position.
Yeah, he was seen as someone who could work well with the Trump administration. I think they were really worried that they wouldn't have anyone like that. You know, he's got decades of experience, and he was seen to be someone who would be good for trade and for securing international trade agreements, and that was really important. Unfortunately, though, he also has this very close relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. And this is a relationship that has been known about for a long time, but it's in these last few drops of files that the US Justice Department have released over the last few months that details of quite how close they were, and some really embarrassing details, you know, pictures of Mandelson at Epstein's Island wearing not many clothes or a bathrobe, evidence that Epstein probably paid Peter Mandelson some money at some point. All these things are coming out that have been hugely embarrassing and forced Keir Starmer to, last September, sack Peter Mandelson.
So the latest tranche of files comes in. Peter Mandelson is no longer ambassador to the US. The latest files drop and they show more details. They reveal more things. What were they?
Yeah, some really embarrassing things and some really quite concerning things. So Peter Mandelson was brought back into the UK government in 2008 when Gordon Brown became Prime Minister after Tony Blair left. And he was brought in as business secretary. And Gordon Brown was seen to think that he needed him to kind of get hold of this kind of slightly flailing premiership. And what the latest tranche of files reveals is that during that period as business secretary, he was passing Epstein information that was potentially incredibly market sensitive that Epstein could use to make money on the market, stuff that wasn't public. And just to give you an idea of what some of these things were, you know, there was things about investments that the UK was going to make and things like that, but also really significantly, hours before Gordon Brown resigned in 2010 after failing to achieve a majority in that election, there was a hung parliament and there was days of not anyone understanding who would be the next prime minister because they had to make a deal with the Liberal Democrats who had a huge amount of support. And what this showed is that hours before Gordon Brown came out to announce to the British public that he was actually going to resign and that David Cameron would be prime minister, hugely important because it would change the entire makeup of the British economy and how it was going to operate, Peter Mandelson told Jeffrey Epstein that Brown was going to resign. And to give you some context, Nick Clegg, the leader of the Liberal Democrats, who went on to be the deputy prime minister, he only found out Brown was resigning 10 minutes before it actually happened. So Jeffrey Epstein over in America knew hours before the next deputy prime minister. And this is, you know, that's market-moving information that
could you're not supposed to share.
Absolutely not. And look, there is now a police investigation. The police raided Mandelson's house the other day and they are looking into, you know, whether any of this broke the law. It's understood that Peter Mandelson doesn't think he broke the law. And it's really important to make clear that he's not accused of any sexual impropriety. There's nothing like that to do with, you know, Jeffrey Epstein's other things going on. This is purely about the relationship and whether he was passing information that Epstein could have profited from.
I mean, some people have bandied the word treason around. That's how concerning and how big this is playing in Britain.
Yeah, and it's really significant that this is all happening and that Mandelson was continuing this relationship well after we knew that Jeffrey Epstein had been charged with sex crimes, that he'd spent time in prison for them. You know, this was continuing after he'd come out of prison, and that he was continuing this relationship despite, you know, by that point, us understanding what Jeffrey Epstein was.
So this now blows up into a huge political crisis, and it's all about who's supposed to take responsibility for bringing Mandelson back into the government fold.
Yeah, that's right. And so, you know, as I just said, people knew that Mandelson had this relationship. And so the question was, well, why was he ever appointed in the first place? And Starmer himself has admitted he was aware of the relationship, but that Mandelson misled him to on the extent of that relationship. The biggest scalp so far has been Morgan McSweeney. Now, this is Keir Starmer's chief of staff. He is seen as being incredibly close to Keir Starmer. And he's actually seen as being the reason that Keir Starmer is in number 10 Downing Street. He is the person that managed his election victory, that has been strategically overseeing the political direction of the Starmer project. Starmer is said to really have relied on Morgan McSweeney, and he's been, you know, hugely reticent to let him go because he just, it's felt like he needs him as he's his political brain. Starmer is seen by many of his allies as lacking that political brain, and Morgan McSweeney was that.
I love the description on The Guardian. It's Simon without Garfunkel.
Or Wallace without Gromit.
Wallace without Gromit. So Morgan McSweeney is gone. So a political scalp has already been claimed. What does that mean for Keir Starmer then? Has that sort of fed the desire for someone to be punished?
Well, look, if we were talking 24 hours ago, I would say that a lot of people would have been saying that Starmer was done for despite Morgan McSweeney going. 24 hours later, the picture actually looks quite different. So we had Anas Sawa, who's the leader of the Scottish Labour Party, who's facing a very difficult election in a few months' time. He stood up on Monday and said he thought it was time Keir Starmer went. And that could have been the domino moment that set the ball rolling, not to mix my metaphors, and event led to more cabinet members and more ministers resigning and forcing Starmer's hand. As it happens, it didn't. Now, we don't know why. I think our colleagues in the UK believe that there were people prepared to push the button then and stand up and say Starmer needs to go. And for whatever reason, they bottled it. And that means that for now,
it's a failed coup, essentially.
Yeah, it's a bit of a damp squib. We don't quite understand why it didn't take off and why others didn't go, because we know there are a lot of people inside his own cabinet who want him to resign and have done for months, even before this later scandal. But for whatever reason, it didn't happen.
Coming up next, the other forces at play pressuring Labour. Keir Starmer has said he's not going anywhere for the moment. We're going to talk about his future in a second, but I do just want to turn more broadly to give people a sense of how this isn't going away anytime soon. I mean, these latest tranche of files also take in fresh allegations against former Prince Andrew.
Yeah, it's one of the ironies of this Epstein scandal is that it seems to be having a much bigger effect in the UK than on the other side of the Atlantic. The former Prince Andrew, now known as Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, he has lost his royal titles. He's lost his home, and he's being, you know, there is talk that he may have to speak to the police. We had the King saying that he was ready to support the police if they wanted to speak to Andrew over some of these most recent claims. And that is an extraordinary moment to see a royal, or perhaps now a former royal, being questioned by the police, and the King himself saying that might be a possibility. So it just shows, you know, we've known that Andrew had this relationship with Epstein, but this scandal is not quieting down.
And Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor has always denied any wrongdoing up to this point. Let's look ahead now, Jonathan, and why this really matters. Labor has a real challenge here to shore up voters because of the threat of Reform and Nigel Farage. So the danger isn't gone yet.
It's absolutely not. And we have to make it really clear that Nigel Farage and the prospect of a Reform government is an existential crisis in the minds of Labor MPs. This isn't passing the baton between the Tories and Labor. This is something different. This is something more akin to a Trump government. Farage represents a different kind of politics, a kind of politics that hasn't been seen in the UK, really. It's this kind of populist, insurgent, and in the minds of many voters and many Labour and Tory members as well, something really dangerous for Britain. Anti-immigrant rhetoric, kind of really visceral, some would say racist language that the MPs use. I think there is a real fear that the chaos that Starmer's government has been embroiled in over the last year and a half has just opened the door to a Nigel Farage government.
I guess the question is that going to keep putting pressure on Labour to possibly move Keir Starmer on, even if he survives this latest Peter Mandelson scandal?
Look, he can survive this latest scandal, but there are many barriers and traps ahead for him in the weeks and months ahead. So we've got the release of documents that will show the process that went into hiring Peter Mandelson for that Washington role. That's going to happen in the next couple of weeks, and that could be hugely embarrassing. We've got a vital by-election in a few weeks' time that Labour should be winning. They won this seat by over 50%, and it looks like they might come third after Reform and Green. And if he gets through all of that, we've got local elections, Scottish and Welsh elections in May. And all the signs point to an absolute drubbing for Labour there, that they will fall behind Reform in many places and that they will likely lose the Welsh Parliament for the first time since devolution. And these are existential threats for Keir Starmer. And I think it's understood that by May, he is likely to face a challenge. And the only thing saving his skin is that they don't know who that challenger will be. Now, there's people lining up to replace him. There are people who are very keen to replace him. But in the minds of voters and, frankly, a lot of other Labour MPs and ministers, it's not clear that any of these people will perform better than him.
But there's no big figure
in
the wings.
There's a few figures in the wings, but no one that seems to be the kind of figure that will capture the voters and really turn the tide. And there was a great line from the former Labour leader, Ed Miliband, on Monday. And he was talking about why this supposed coup against Starmer on Monday failed to materialise. And he said that Labour MPs looked over the precipice and they didn't like what they saw there.
All right, well, that might protect Keir Starmer for now. Just briefly before we go, it's really easy to forget about the victims in all of this. And some of them have continued to speak publicly, do interviews and really push for accountability. They want more files released. So this isn't over yet. We could get more revelations.
Well, the US Justice Department have said there are no more files being released. What we do know, though, is that there are more files. So who knows how that might be? And the other thing is that all of the files that have been released were hugely redacted. So it may be that there's pressure to kind of be a bit more public with them. But yes, you're right. There is still a lot of anger from victims and also, you know, frankly, from a lot of other people who have been involved in these kinds of areas. Keir Starmer is someone who, in his career as a lawyer, was so brave in tackling issues like the abuse of women and the trafficking of women and things like that. It was an issue really important to him. And I think a lot of people see the way that he's handled this and his hiring of Mandelson as a betrayal of that. And we know that there are a lot of female Labour MPs who are hugely angry with them. In fact, he held a meeting with them this week, a coterie of female MPs, to listen to them, frankly, and to speak to them about what he was doing, because there is so much anger. So you're right, this issue might just keep running.
Jonathan, it's always good to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Reggie. It's a pleasure.
That was Guardian Australia's UK-US site editor, Jonathan Yerushalmi. This episode was produced by Camilla Hannan and Karishma Luthria. Sound design and mixing by Daniel Simo. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. Don't forget to subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to podcasts, including on Spotify. I'm Regid Ahmed. See you soon.